Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, welcome into this week's episode of the Show Before the Show podcast, the official podcast of Minor League Baseball, as we come to you in the final time in the regular season here in 2021, as crazy as that is. My name is Tyler Mon, joined from New York City by Benjamin Hill and Sam Dykstra. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good, Tyler. We are here. We have moved venues this week. We are in the Jimmy Fox room. Which, honestly, Ben, I don't know if you agree with me on this. This might be the most beautiful corner office meeting room in all of Manhattan. We are currently looking right down the barrel of 6th Avenue. I can see the Freedom Tower from here, and we are at 50th Street. So it's a long distance down the way. As always, we have Radio City right to our left. I know I'm painting a picture in an audio form for a non-visual podcast.
That's why you need to paint it, though. That's good.
Yes, this is true. Yeah, yellow cabs for days that we can see down the way. This is just, it is gorgeous. What do you think, Ben?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely iconic. You know, New York City, well, that could be a whole separate podcast on the benefits and drawbacks of living in New York City. But yeah, to walk into a conference room to tape this podcast and turn to my left and just see such an iconic New York City landscape and view. Avenue of the Americas, a straight shot down. It does make me happy, and it makes me feel like, hey, this is pretty cool.
And I feel like that very fittingly puts us into the mindset of where we kind of are in the close of the 2021 season, which is, hey, we made it. As you're looking straight down, you know, Avenue of the Americas, and it's a spectacle that looks a lot more normal than it did this time last year, especially this time, you know, 14, 15 months ago. Guys, we're getting so close to the end of the season. We're going to touch on that here coming up in a little bit. But Ben, you got a chance to get on the road for just a short trip. Both distance-wise and duration-wise, but hit Somerset last week for a trip to see the new AA affiliate of the New York Yankees. Tell us about the trip. I know it was something that you had planned before, and then it kind of got pushed back, but how was the Somerset trip?
Yeah, it was great. It was very memorable. TD Bank Ballpark, home of the Somerset Patriots. It's the fifth ballpark I was able to get to this year that I had not visited before, you know, 182 career, so that'll be the number I have going into the off season, and I'm really glad I got to go. It was on my agenda, vaguely speaking, all season. And then I plan to go the last week of August to visit the Somerset Patriots in their first season as a AA Yankees affiliate. And, you know, the weather wasn't that great on that last Friday in August. And it was like, hey, since this is not part of a larger trip, I'm going to postpone this till there's better weather. Maybe that was kind of ironic because then less than a week after that, the remnants of Hurricane Ida hit that region, well, hit a lot of regions, but it hit Central Jersey, Somerset County, Bridgewater Township, where the ballpark is located, very, very hard. The Raritan River is essentially there's a train tracks behind the ballpark and the Raritan River beyond that, and that river overflowed and flooded the ballpark, flooded the parking lot, you know, completely submerged cars. You know, that was a lot of the players' cars in the parking lot. The team was on the road at the time. The waters went into the ballpark, completely submerged the playing field at depths of, you know, 6, 7, 8 feet, and went all the way into the seventh row of the seating bowl. That's September 2nd. So my first thought then is this larger concern for the area and the people involved. On a selfish level, my thought is, well, it doesn't look like I'll be getting to Somerset this year, given the state of the ballpark here on September 2nd. And the team was coming up on a 6-game homestand to close out their home schedule with the Hartford Yard Goats. The first 3 games of those were shifted to Hartford. But meanwhile, work got underway. The waters receded. All hands on deck cleanup operation led by groundskeeper Dan Perner. You know, as many 30, 40 people at a time, you know, working long days, cleaning up the ballpark. You know, a lot of it was just as the groundskeeper, Dan Perner, told me, you know, a lot of it was just hosing, you know, the grass is just, you know, mud and gunk and sediment everywhere. So just hosing everything off, you know, putting the padding back on the walls. And that's sort of a puzzle piece on its, you know, in and of itself, because you have all these different little disjointed pieces of padding. It's not necessarily a uniform thing, given the layout of the playing field and where the padding goes, and on, there was a lot to do. So this past Friday, September 10th, was their first game back to play their three final home games at home. And so not only did I just get to go see a new ballpark that I'd never been to, it was in this very memorable and, you know, frankly, fairly inspiring situation that the team was able to return. And I think it speaks to a lot about the team, the front office, of course, the groundskeeper, but the whole front office. So talking to different front office members before the game, some local politicians, the groundskeeper, about how this all came together, I was like, well, this is a story in and of itself. And that story on what the team did to get back ready to play 8 days after devastating flooding is up on MILB.com right now. And I hope people check it out and, you know, also look at some pictures and video to get a sense of this and read all about it. Beyond that, yes, then it was just also a minor league baseball game. And as these things go, it's weird how normal it felt, you know, once it got started. If you were at that ballpark and didn't know it had flooded, you wouldn't have known on this past Friday night. So it was just seeing a minor league ball game. The ballpark was built, you know, in the late 90s. Reminded me quite a bit, honestly, you know, it's also in Central Jersey, of the AA team that the Somerset Patriots replaced, the Trenton Thunder. Just in kind of the architecture and style of it. You enter, you know, main entrance, home plate, and are right into, you know, full view of the playing field on the concourse. It's not a 360-degree concourse. It goes, you know, back up around roughly, you know, towards the foul poles on both sides. You know, fairly no frills, brick exterior, but a really pleasant place to see a ball game, and, you know, one I really enjoyed. And I think me growing up in the Philadelphia area, have family in Central Jersey, it felt very familiar to me. I guess just the overall landscape and the jersey setting and the, you know, types of people at the ballpark. Just I kind of had to remind myself a few times, you've never been here before, because there was something about it that just felt from my own history and experience as a place I'd sort of already been.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what was the atmosphere like there? Because you were there at least a little bit after it reopened, but not that much after. Was there any feeling of like, oh, this is great that we're back this quickly amongst the fans, amongst the people you were talking to? Like, I know you said if you didn't know that the park was flooded, you couldn't tell. But in terms of just general atmosphere, what was that like, both as a new ballpark that you'd never seen before, but also just in a return after what seemed like could have been a season-ending storm?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously a lot of people were really happy to get back out to the ballpark, especially after the stress of that week. And, you know, you want to keep in mind when you're celebrating baseball's return and, oh, I can't believe this cleanup job, you know, it's trying to keep in mind that, you know, people lost their lives and many people lost their homes. And, you know, I didn't want to give too much credence to like everything's great again just because there's a team here. But symbolically, I think we all know this about sports, and I think especially baseball, because it's, you know, the most daily of the sports and this the most accessible of the sports just in terms of attending a game, that a team playing in the wake of any kind of tragedy, whether it's, you know, a weather-related tragedy or, you know, something that happened in the community, you know, whatever that may be, it means a lot because it's a sense of normalcy. It's a place to gather. And I think there was very much that feeling then, one of gratitude. And I think the Patriots, from what I can tell, you know, I never went when they were in the Independent Atlantic League, but for 20 years, you know, they, I think, built up a really good fan base in the Atlantic League. And you just get the sense that the fans there are pretty committed to the team, and switching over to the Yankees affiliation just made a good relationship for them even better because, you know, it's Central Jersey. You have a lot of Yankees fans in that general area. And the team is, you know, right in the thick of the Northeast League pennant race. So, for the subset of fans, which I would say in Somerset is higher than other markets, you know, who know what's going on, you know, on the field, you know, rooting for Yankees affiliates, aware that, you know, the team's in the postseason hunt and, you know, wanting the postseason even more now, just with the story of the ballpark flooding. And not only are they able to, were they able to return for their last three home games, but if they can make it to the playoffs, then there's a coda you know, on this long, strange, transitional, sometimes traumatic, and perhaps ultimately triumphant season.
Well, Ben, as we make this push toward the final weekend of the regular season, we switch coasts and we head out to the West Coast for our interview segment this week, where one team is making a big push promo wise for the end of the season. That's the Stockton Ports. And we got a chance to catch up with Stockton today. We're recording this on Thursday, the 16th. Coming up tomorrow, a very Stockton night as they will honor their local heritage crop. Tell us about what's coming up in the interview today.
Yeah. The asparagus is the asparagus. Wait, no, I almost just said asparagus is the Stockton capital of the world. And,
you know, by transitive property, maybe.
Yeah, it's probably not wrong.
But also, in addition to that, Stockton, California is the asparagus capital of the world. And we're going to talk about the team, the Stockton Ports Asparagus Night, with Pat Filippone, the president of the team. And what goes into celebrating asparagus at the ballpark? You know, I've visited Stockton myself twice, you know, designated eaters getting asparagus dogs, asparagus hot dogs, you know, fried asparagus being a ballpark staple. They incorporate it into the concessions on a regular basis. But one night a year, they go even extra hard, extra fragrant for asparagus. And that's coming up. And we're going to learn all about Stockton, California, the asparagus capital of the world, and what the hometown ports do to celebrate that very important and proud distinction.
It hit me about halfway through that. Why don't they call them the Stalk, S-T-A-L-K?
Stockton
Ports. Why is this off? Are we still recording?
I'm recording, but
all right, yeah. We're going to keep this in because that's a great observation.
I'm honestly going to make that the show title this week.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here on the show, Before the Show podcast, I, Benjamin Hill, co-host Sam Dykstra and Tyler Maughan, are joined by a special guest, president of the Stockton Ports, Pat Filippone. And this coming Saturday, the anti-penultimate day of the regular season, the Stockton Ports are hosting their annual Asparagus Night promotion. This has been something they've been doing at the ballpark for a long time, celebrating Stockton's status as the asparagus capital of the world. So we thought we'd have Pat on to you know, talk more about asparagus, because how often do you get to do a segment on asparagus, especially on a sports podcast? So not very often. So we're breaking new ground per usual. First and foremost, Pat, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
So Stockton, California, asparagus capital of the world. Can you elaborate a little bit more on clearly this important relationship between vegetable and city?
Yeah, that moniker is very proudly held within this community. I mean, Stockton is like every market as a minor league team has a unique characteristic, but Stockton really has two: is the port, which we, you know, honor in our normal name, the seafaring industry, and we're so far inland, we're the farthest inland port in the state. But then it's the asparagus capital of the world. The agriculture piece in this part of the country is obviously huge, as everyone knows, but asparagus is particularly grown in Stockton, been celebrated in the community from festivals to you name it. Restaurants are all across town have their own take on asparagus. And, you know, we joined in the fun. 8 years ago, really, we really got serious about it, but we've always served asparagus at the ballpark since the new ballpark opened in 05 or was new. Obviously, we're 16 years into it. So it's always one of our more popular, unique items. And there's times where we run out and you hear about it. You know, we've always kind of embraced the fun of asparagus, the proud tendencies of this market to embrace the product. And we just like to have fun with it. And that's leads to our asparagus theme nights and our asparagus guy's name and, you know, what we're doing tomorrow night, we're excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of really blowing this out, I mean, as you said, serving asparagus at the ballpark, you know, since it opened. But once you decided to, you know, have the theme jerseys and go that route, how do you design an identity, you know, temporary or not, around asparagus, which is, I don't want to say asparagus is unpleasant looking. I think it looks very pleasant, but you know, a long stalky green vegetable doesn't seem like it gives itself over to the most, just obvious design possibilities.
Yeah. I mean, I not having an artistic bone in my body. I'll kind of tell you the thought process behind it. Then, the experts that we, hired to do it and did a great job. So the ports, which we've, you know, we have our claim to Mudville and the Casey at the Bat saga story. I know there's a debate about that, which Ben, we've talked about before and you've written about before. So we've always had a classic look at baseball and a standard red, white, and blue look we identified when we when Stockton was awarded the American City of the Year in like 2002, and because we always had imagery of the major league team prior to then. So we wanted to go red, white, and blue and put our mantle on traditional baseball in Stockton. So move forward as we're going to the 2013 season, we said, hey, let's do an offshoot branding effort that we can embrace other parts of Stockton. We want to keep the All-American basic baseball look with red, white, and blue, the city's colors, but we want to integrate, you know, the stevedores, the ports, which we were named after, then also asparagus. So we bounced around a lot of ideas internally. I had a great staff at the time, still do, but at the time, they were really into getting it out there as something new. So at that point, we hired, I don't know if they were called Brandios yet, or if they were still Plan B, but you guys know those guys, the foremost experts in this area. And we kind of threw at them what we were thinking about. They embraced it like they always do in these projects, and came up, did some research themselves. And they came up with a bunch of logos and branding that integrated the dock worker, 5 o'clock dock, and asparagus. And they mixed the two perfectly, I think, with the stevedore guy holding a spear of asparagus. And then we had some offshoot, just asparagus branding as well. And that's where we developed the asparagus guy's name and did some mascot stuff and running asparagus and all kinds of stuff. And the market loved it because we kept the classic look, but we had the alternate look that delved into specifics in town, the gritty kind of part of Stockton that people are proud of. And at the end of the day, what's not to like about asparagus? So it all worked out very well.
And when you guys are talking about incorporating it at the ballpark, talking about logos here and stuff like that, but how do you guys incorporate a vegetable? Like, we don't think about being at the ballpark and literally eating your vegetables. Like, this feels like something my mom would try to force on me when I was six. I know everybody around that area is proud of the asparagus, and why shouldn't they be? But when you're trying to make it into a ballpark staple, you guys, like you guys are, how are you guys able to do that?
Well, so we started with a couple traditional things. So we developed the running guest character. We worked with Dave Raymond back when he was really into the mascots, creating the costumes, and he did some cool costumes for us with the various asparagus, three different ones, like a chocolate covered, a fried one. And, you know, we did the racing the mascots and had the mascots around. I know the Wilmington team did stuff with a celery guy popping out of the scoreboard at one point. So, you know, think that we had that in the background of, that was a cool little imagery thing. And we could, if you can do celery, asparagus is way cooler than celery. So, you know, we kind of did an offshoot on that. And then that morphed into just having a Gus guy run around. And then we developed a female Gus, and I jotted down her name. I'm sorry, I always forget her name, but, and I can't seem to find it right now. Augustina, that's what we call her. Augustina. Oh, so we had Gus and Augustina. So, you know, in COVID, they kind of disappeared on us a little bit, but they're going to be out in force tomorrow night at the game. And, you know, it's just having fun. I mean, again, it's you know, you can't take having an asparagus as a theme too serious. You know, so we just have fun with it and have these two characters bopping around, taking pictures and just being present, and it puts a smile on people's face. Again, I always fall back on what's not to like about asparagus. So, you know, just makes it fun and unique and ironic.
You guys were in on the food trend so early, and you know, with apologies to Lehigh Valley and Fresno and those others, there's a lot of the food trends that I feel like a lot of places can claim. A lot of places can claim bacon. I'm sorry, Lehigh Valley. Tacos are a universal thing now. But for asparagus, I feel like not many people probably knew outside of the Stockton area of like, oh, that's the world capital of asparagus. What was the kind of the national reaction when the merchandise sales started and people started getting wind of it and reacting to it?
People were pumped, because I agree with you. I mean, I'm not born and raised in Stockton, so I had no idea until I came here. And I actually had a guest from out of town at the game last night. Same thing. Like, I was talking to him about it. He had no idea about it either. The reaction was fantastic. Like 5 years ago, when ESPN was still doing like their feature on the minor league teams, like on Saturday morning, they featured the Gus branding and our logos. And it was amazing how the sales that generated, just the calls and the emails we got, that people were just pumped about it. Because I agree. I mean, I think there's somewhere in Florida that grows asparagus quite a bit, but they know that we're the capital. So there's like no argument like Casey and the Bat is with Stockton and Western Mass. So people just defer to it, and we're proud of it. Maybe other people laugh about it, but we're proud. We laugh about it, but we're proud about it as well. And it is unique, and it's something that we enjoy embracing.
Yeah, and a lot of those teams that Tyler just mentioned in terms of like the Fresno Tacos, who are now in your league, have like Taco Tuesdays where they play every Tuesday as the Tacos. You guys, the Asparagus is kind of like a special event for you guys, but have you ever talked about expanding it out once a month, once a week, anything like that?
We have. I mean, we do the 5 o'clock doc theme every Friday during the season, and that's gone really well. We have talked about doing Asparagus. In 2020, we were going to do a full weekend. This year with the truncated season, we decided we'd pick a night. So I think you'll see us do a full weekend next year and moving into the future and get even more creative and dig into it. But I know the Fresno branding has gone great for them. And, you know, I think Ben, you had, when you came and visited, an asparagus taco. So we whip those out every once in a while. So, we're going to have those tomorrow night ourselves. So we're going to kind of mix the taco theme in with our asparagus and have some fun with that too.
Yeah. And during the game itself, are there you know, special guests that come out to the ballpark or maybe big players in the local asparagus industry?
We invite people from the ag community to come to the game. So there's some that will come out and have fun. I mean, the mayor is not going to be able to make it this year. We always like to get the mayor out and do some stuff around that also. So it is something that everyone has fun with. We do need to find, I wish there was an asparagus spokesperson for the country. They should come from Stockton. Maybe we'll create that moving forward. But, you know, there's no particular name I could drop with you right now, but we'll have some people out to embrace the local community and the ag community as well.
And would you say, I mean, I guess being the asparagus capital of the world, is this the most you know, prominent food that you associate with Stockton, or are there other more local regional specialties that you think you could maybe turn into separate promos?
Asparagus is far and away the most local regional one that we have. I mean, the ag industry in the Central Valley of California is huge. You know, obviously Modesto is the nuts, right? I mean, there's nuts down in that part of the, you know, the next county south of us. There's a lot of cherry farms in Stockton, so you never know. Maybe we can come up with some of the cherries, but obviously George Washington was playing with cherries before Stockton was a city, so we can't claim that as our own, but you never know. We may have some fun with that as we move forward as well, but asparagus is, I think it's never ending what we can do with the asparagus theme, no question.
Never ending options and opportunities for asparagus. Well, this year's 2021 iteration taking place Friday, September 17th, tomorrow, for us right now doing this segment. So, and if you're listening to this podcast and maybe the game hasn't started yet, get out to Stockton, celebrate the asparagus. And Pat, hope you have a great asparagus night. And you know, thanks for joining us on the Show Before the Show podcast.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks you for asking. And good luck going into this last weekend of the season.
Thank you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Moving along on this week's episode of the Show Before the Show podcast. Thanks for tuning in wherever you found us. We got all of our past episodes on all of your favorite podcasting services and also at MILB.com/podcast and all kinds of good stuff to get to before we wrap up this week's edition of the show. And that brings us to three strikes here in segment number three. And we've got a big time thing for you to utilize this weekend. Minor League Baseball has deemed that for the rest of this 2021 campaign, MILB TV is free for the rest of the season. So that is strike one on this week's episode of the Show Before the Show. You can catch any MILB TV game from now through the end of the season for free. This is always fun. There are a ton of guys who are still in the minors who are finishing off this season on really, really good notes, and guys who are very fun to watch as we get closer and closer to the end of the season. But Sam, this is a fun little September surprise with the season going later into September and now a whole bunch of prospects on showcase on free MILB TV.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of guys are ending the season well. I feel like that's especially true this year. Usually we're talking, especially in September, but late August, of guys kind of running out of gas and things kind of coming to an end and really winding down. I feel like there's been a lot of the top 100 guys are really ending on solid notes, and this free MILB.TV offer is a great way to check out these guys. MILB.TV has never been bigger. It's never been easier to watch. It's never been clearer. So if you were holding off on this year for whatever reason, and you may have many of them, that's totally fine. But now is a great opportunity to check in. Maybe it's something you want to try for 2022. One thing we should note is that MILB.TV, it's not only free for the rest of the season, it's also free for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which is huge. And that's great. So if your team is eligible for MILB.TV, it's not like every playoff series is going to be televised, but if they had MILB TV during the regular season, they will have it for the playoffs as well, and it will be free. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch out. There's one thing that there's a couple series that I'm keeping my eye on, and Tyler, I'll give you one here in a minute, but at Low A West, the San Jose Giants and Fresno Grizzlies are playing each other this week. That's just the way the schedule worked out, but they're also already clinched, both of them. So they'll be playing each other in the Low A West Championship Series next week. They're going to get real comfortable with one another. We've talked a lot this summer about how is the six-game series going to work? Are teams going to get bored of each other or testy with one another? For the most part, it seems like that hasn't happened. But if that's ever going to happen, it's going to be between San Jose and Fresno. And those two teams, not only are they making the playoffs, but they're also loaded. We talked about Zach Bean in the past, the top Rockies prospect. He's leading that Fresno team for much of the season, but really coming on strong here in the second half. And Luis Matos on the San Jose side, entering the week, he had gone 9 for his last 9. He'd reached in each of his last 13 plate appearances. I haven't checked in to see where that is now, but Luis Matos, a lot of us were really high on. We just need to see a full season out of him. We've gotten that now. He is a top 100 prospect. So keep an eye on the outfield in that series. And one other one that's kind of similar to that, we've discussed the AAA final stretch before. We'll probably get into that more next week and beyond when that's going to be, the only rodeo in town going into October in the minor leagues. But one series that it will actually be two series is Iowa and Omaha. They're playing each other in the final week of the regular season, and then they'll be playing each other in the second week of the AAA final stretch. Omaha, if you've been listening to the show at all, you know they are loaded with the Royals prospects and Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Prado, and MJ Melendez. Iowa just recently got Brennan Davis, the top prospect in the Cubs system. He homered twice in his first two at-bats. Tyler, you wrote the story about it. What stood out from your conversation with Brennan Davis?
Yeah, Brennan Davis, when he answered the phone, or when I answered the phone, I can't remember who called whom, I said, so I guess the AAA is pretty easy, right? And he said, yeah, not really. But I think for him, it was just a case of, you know, being able to get to that level, kind of get some of the nerves out of the way. He sort of laughed his way through describing his first two at-bats. He had homers in his first two at-bats, as noted. And he said, you know, in the first one, I really got myself in a hole. I was down 0-2 and ended up getting a pitch that kind of hung up, a breaking ball that I took out. And then he said in his second at-bat, he said the pitch before the pitch that he hit out for a second home run, he said he took just an awful swing and then was able to stay in that at bat and crank another home run. It's pretty exciting. I mean, for Cubs fans, obviously this has been a frustrating year and losing, you know, pretty much everybody who was part of the core of the World Series championship team. But you do have guys like Brendan Davis who are coming up, and I really liked his approach to being a AAA, which is, he said, I'm going to use this as a learning experience. If I go into next year and I have this under my belt, kind of knowing what the highest level of the minor leagues is like, if I can conquer this, then I know I'm going to be ready when my name gets called to make it up to Chicago. So he's definitely viewing the last few weeks of this season in the right light. And it was really good to get a chance to talk to him.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more like him here in the next couple of days or week or so. Because the AAA final stretch, it is essentially the regular season. Stats are counting towards the regular season, but it's everyday baseball. And if you have a player at AA who you want to get a little extra look at, it's a postseason tournament, but calling them up to AAA, getting those couple extra at bats, those little extra innings, or like you said with Brendan Davis, just the experience of being in AAA, that's going to have some value, even if it's just for a couple days. So would not be surprised if he isn't the last big name to head up to the top level before the 2021 season is out.
I've got my eyes on AA Central. So we explained, obviously, AAA final stretch is the one exception to the minor league postseason picture this year. Everywhere else, top two teams in the league will move on to the league championship series. Here's how things stack up in AA Central. In the North division of that league, Wichita has the best record in the league at 66-50. Arkansas is three games back at 63-53. Northwest Arkansas is 3.5 back at 62-53. And Tulsa is 4 back at 62-54. In the South division, Frisco's running away with that division, but that does not necessarily mean that postseason play is in Frisco's future. They're at 62-53, 5.5 games ahead of Amarillo. But coming up this weekend, there's some interesting matchups, especially Arkansas on the road at Wichita. That's where Julio Rodriguez is with that Arkansas team. So he, just from a prospect standpoint, is probably the guy who's most exciting to keep an eye on in that league. But you look at, you know, just that North division itself, four teams within four games of each other, and then poor Springfield, which is 23 games out. And then even in the South, Frisco isn't really being challenged for the division, but Frisco is right in the hunt for that second postseason spot if Wichita closes out the first spot. They're right in the middle with Northwest Arkansas, even with that 62-53 record. So keep an eye on those five teams. Two of those teams will move on, and that'll be a fun one here coming up for this 2021 postseason picture. We already do have a handful of teams who have clinched their postseason berths. Sam noted, of course, Fresno was, I believe, the first of all teams to clinch its postseason berth. They'll move on and face San Jose in the Low-A West Championship Series. Sam, who else is sticking out to you as far as the postseason clinchers have already gone? I know Mississippi was the first team in from AA. The AAA landscape, very different, but AA, High A, and Low A, we're starting to get a little bit clearer picture.
Yeah, no, for sure. And one that stands out to me is the most immediate one that clinched just Wednesday night with Eugene in the San Francisco Giants system clinching one of the High A West spots. High A West is actually an interesting league this year. If you've been following that at all, they only have six teams. So there is only one division. There isn't this confusion like there are in some of the other leagues in which a team could win its division and not go to the playoffs. There's only six teams here. They've gotten to know each other very well, but Eugene is the first one to clinch a playoff spot there. The thing that's big for me in that scenario is it allows for more opportunities to see Marco Luciano, the top Giants prospect who got called up. He's 20 years old right now. He just turned 20 on September 10th. Pretty much struggled at Eugene. I think he'll tell you that. I think the Giants will tell you that. But he is getting there pretty young. This is still his age 19 season. So I think a little extra time, you know, as many as five extra games in a meaningful environment could be huge for Marco Luciano up there in Eugene. So keeping an eye on that one. And then Seth Corey, I think, was their starting pitcher the other night when they clinched. I think a little extra time with him could be huge as well. So Eugene is definitely what I'm keeping my eye on there. It looks like they're probably going to play Spokane. Spokane currently has a 4.5 game lead over Everett. But we'll see if things hold in that division or not. So definitely keep an eye out on that one. Low A Southeast finals are set between Bradenton and Tampa. So that'll be another one that we already know is going to happen next week. And there's still so much to be determined. Tyler, you just mentioned like one of the closest races we have. By the time you guys hear this on Friday, there's still lots to play with 3 days left in the season at AA, High A, and Low A. So keep an eye on MILB.com. We have a running story on all the clinchings that are happening every day, every night. It goes all the way back to, I think, like you said, September 7th is the first one we had when Fresno clinched. Now, 9 days later, more teams are clinching every day. And, you know, by next Monday, we'll have a pretty good idea of what the postseason format will look like at AA, High A, and Low A.
And for strike three on this week's episode of the show before the show, we're talking one of the most impressive breakout prospects in the minor leagues this year. And that is the number 15 overall prospect in baseball and the top prospect in the New York Yankees organization. A guy we talked about just a couple of weeks ago with a MILB TV recommendation, but currently with High A Hudson Valley in that Yankee system, the 30th overall pick in 2019, the shortstop Anthony Volpe. Anthony this year, 291, 394, 602 is his slash line in 51 games with Hudson Valley. That followed 54 games with Tampa at Low A, in which he hit 302, 455, 623. He has been outstanding so far this season. He has hit 28 home runs. He has driven in 96 runs in his career through three seasons. He only played 34 games with Pulaski during that debut year, but you know, that's 139 games professionally, and this dude's got 28 home runs. He has been really impressive. 26 of those have come this season. Sam, for Anthony Volpe and for kind of the anatomy of breakout prospects in this season, what does his season say about where he is and how quickly he really can make this climb? He's only 20 years old, but man, that dude seems like he is very much on a fast track now.
Yeah. The reason why we're making this the final strike is I have a feature coming up on MLB.com about him. I got to speak to Anthony Volpe for about 20 minutes. He was very gracious with his time. Great kid, great mega, lots of stories to tell, but I caught up with him at Hudson Valley this week. And just to figure out like what happened to this breakout, you mentioned the power is the biggest thing that stands out to pretty much everybody. And that includes the Yankees. They thought when they drafted him, hey, this is a kid who can hit. He can field his position really well. He might not be the biggest burner you're ever going to see, but he's a very good base runner, could steal a few bags at some point. A lot of 55s and 50s across the board. Power was not one of them necessarily. All of a sudden, now he's hitting 25 plus home runs in his first full season. What went into that? And in speaking to him, he said, you know, a lot of people thought 2020 was a bad year, and it was. Everybody would much rather have a regular minor league season, and I'm sure he would have too. But the fact that he didn't have to play games every day allowed him to every day tinker with what he was doing. Every day he was trying to work on something, going into what people call the lab. He was studying his swing. He was trying to study tape, not only on himself, but also on major leaguers in terms of what worked. He had a little bit more of an uppercut swing now in terms of in getting a chance to elevate the ball, which is obviously a big part of today's game, but also allows him to get into his power. That's not something he was showing before. Now he's elevating the ball a little bit more. And he also spent a lot of last year getting stronger, working out in the Yankee strength program. You know, so many guys we talked to last year said they were sending video back and forth and they were getting instructions. He was working out in New Jersey and New York, spending all that time working on getting strong, working on making sure that his swing is as close to a finished product. And he said, if I was playing games every day last year, that probably wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have been able to tinker that much. I would have been much more focused on in-game production. So he thinks that really helped him out. It was fascinating talking to Damon Oppenheimer, who works in amateur scouting with the Yankees, and them straight up saying like, yeah, we were confident in a lot of things he could do, but the fact that he's hitting 25 homers already is a surprise even to us. And if that's true, because the Yankees have done a lot of work on this guy, being a New Jersey kid, they knew him really well going into the draft. And if he's surprising even them, think of what he's doing to the rest of the industry and the way people have been surprised. You know, he's now our top Yankees prospect on MLB Pipeline. And that was through a lot of external sourcing in which people said, listen, all of this is real. Like, it's not just scouting the stat line. What he is doing is much better than any of us thought and much quicker than any of us thought. And at a time right now in which, you know, Gleyber Torres just moved over to second base and the future of the shortstop position is a big question in the Bronx. I'm not saying Anthony Volpe is going to be a starting shortstop for New York next year or that he should necessarily figure into their immediate plans with so many shortstops on the free agent market, but it's something to think about. I mean, the breakout is very real and he's now one of the most exciting prospects in baseball. And I'm going to be really fascinated to see what the Yankees do next with him and try to figure out where he fits in their plans in 2022 and beyond.
That comment about the being able to tinker on things last year, Brendan Davis made a very similar comment to that. I asked him about being at the alternate site last year, and he said, you know, it was actually really good to be in a place where I just got to focus on baseball and development. There weren't stats, there weren't games. I wasn't worried about any of that stuff. It was just a constant work on how can I get better as a ball player? And that was interesting. Marty Peavy, his manager with Iowa, worked with him last year at the alt site as well. But I feel like a lot of guys do have those feelings about last, I don't want to call it season for the minor leaguers or for the prospects, but last year, if they got work at the alt site or an instructs or whatever it was. And it's interesting to see that stuff bearing fruit. It's, you know, kind of the baseball version of what we hope are some positive legacies that came out of all of us having such a rough 2020.
Yeah. And that wasn't universal either. We should right. say like, the guys we're talking about here are Brendan Davis and Anthony Volpe, who right. are literally ranked back to back 14 and 15 in MLB's top 100. Like you have to have a certain skill set and a certain internal drive to really work on yourself at a time when there aren't games every day. And you also have to have access to resources. Davis playing at the alt site is certainly one of those. Volpe, it seems like he had a pretty good workout structure up here in Jersey and New York, but still, like, it speaks to those guys that they were able to thrive. Cause I know a lot of guys were struggling at the beginning yeah. of the year because they didn't have game situations and getting thrown right back into the deep end was not helpful. So the ones who did
only
make the most of it,
only yeah, so many spots in the alt sites and things like that too. So for somebody like Anthony Volpe to be able to continuously do that work on your own is one thing that's maybe even a little bit more impressive than the guys who did get the opportunity to go to the alt sites, to go to instructs, to go to have these opportunities where you're in a more structured environment. And either way, I mean, I really admire not just ball players, but anybody who was able to make it through last year in a way where they utilized some of that time and were able to be productive in it because it was not an easy stretch of time for any of us to do that in any context. So pretty impressive for these guys as young ball players to do that.
Yeah, for sure. It's maybe this will be, what was it that Shakespeare wrote under quarantine?
Yeah, I don't remember. Those memes went around so early on.
Yeah, that was a meme joke going around the internet.
Of like, yeah, of like, oh, look at what happened during the Black Death. All of these people accomplished amazing things shortly thereafter. And I was like, yeah, I'll be lucky to just not be 800 pounds.
Hey, we watched The Sopranos.
That's true. We did. That is true. We both did go through The Sopranos, and that was an accomplishment. You know, it's a little bit less than climbing to, you know, AAA at 22 or whatever Brendan Davis is doing. But, you know, we all have our things.
Hey, I'm just saying I'm prepped for Many Saints of Newark now.
Same. Which is going to be in theaters. I was not expecting that. I thought it was just going to be an HBO Max release. That's in theaters, though.
Oh, I know that that's a discussion for another podcast. But I know David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos, was actually pretty incensed that it's going on HBO Max.
Ah, interesting.
He kind of cut his teeth on HBO.
Yeah, on HBO.
But I get it. Like, you get told you are making a Sopranos movie.
Right.
You want as many people to see it on the big screen as possible. Not to be told, oh yeah, it's just going to be like everything else. And it's going to kind of feel like another episode of Sopranos, which would be disappointing.
Tune in next week for the pilot episode of our new podcast, The Show Before The Sopranos.
Who's crazy. Who? I'll just wear a tracksuit and we'll figure it out later.
Okay. Yeah, it works. We can each do that. I'll eat a lot of prosciutto. It'll be great. All right, that's three strikes for this week's episode. We've got maybe a ghostly cameo coming up, and then we're back to wrap it up next.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
interrupt this podcast to bring you another thrilling edition of Ghosts of the Miners. Now, here's your correspondent and host, Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to Ghosts of the Miners, in which all of you out there in Radio Land must identify the legitimate historical ball club hiding amidst the fraudulent pair. One was as real as you or I. The others were imaginary friends. In the last segment, I asked you which of the following minor league baseball teams did at one time exist. A. The San Francisco Knickerbockers. B. The St. Louis Trouser Wearers. C. The Denver Dungarees. Well, bust my britches, A. The San Francisco Knickerbockers suited up in Bay Area baseball in the tail end of the 19th century. The team's name likely threads back to when New Yorkers in San Francisco formed a Knickerbocker Association in 1851, and the moniker was stitched to a few amateur ball clubs in the years that followed. A few decades later, the Golden Gate City formally tossed their Knickerbockers into the Pacific League. The Sacramento Daily Union recounts a mid-June game from 1879 in which the visiting Knickerbockers beat the pants off the hometown team. As San Francisco pitcher The Only Nolan, who'd played for Indianapolis in the National League the previous year, one-hit the Sacramento Blue Stockings. The Knickerbocker Nine is composed of men above the average in size and muscular development, the newspaper reported, and their general playing is credible. The story went on to say that The Only Nolan had spent the afternoon pitching balls with great rapidity and just where he liked. But The Only Nolan, perhaps the best pitcher in the West, had been a Knickerbocker only because, according to the Humboldt Times, he'd been expelled from the National League for allegedly unprofessional conduct, and he was, quote, honorably reinstated, end quote, in the majors by mid-October 79. In the end, the Knickerbockers put their trousers on one leg at a time, just like anybody else. After hemming and hawing, they appeared in the 81 and 86 versions of the California League, and when the Sacramento Daily Union had occasion to report on a game between them and the Eurekas in July of 86, it was something of a waste. The paper writing, "The contest was close and at times very interesting, but its excellence was marred by the wrangling and kicking indulged in. When a public game of baseball is played and an admission fee charged, the players should then consider themselves bound to act so as to please their patrons." And that's the inseam scoop on the dirty knees of the Knickerbockers. Now, on to the question for next time. Which of these agricultural devotees dedicated their time to the ball fields and the miners? A. The Jacksonville Orange Juicers. B. The Appleton Cidermen. C. The Kalamazoo Celery Pickers. Want to know the answer? Go to a yard and dig. Or tune into the next Ghosts of the Miners. But for now, you'll have to excuse me. My producer Ben Hill is in a race from the Fisherman's Wharf to the Giants ballpark, and after his mad ascent of Russian Hill, his legs have seized up in the Tenderloin District.
Final segment of the 2021 season. Obviously, minor league baseball has not been, left untouched by the rise of the Delta variant and coronavirus as the 2021 season has gone on. All of that, we have seen games postponed and, teams that have dealt with it. But man, if you would have told me back in April that we were going to make it to September and the season would feel as this season has, I think we all would have been pretty thrilled. This has been a challenging season, obviously, in a lot of ways. I know kind of the interesting thing is I know a lot of front offices have sort of looked at it as this is the, the dress rehearsal for 2022, coming into the ballpark and doing things and getting back into the mode of it. And next year, hopefully, is when we can blow the doors off and, really have a normal season. But now we've made it, for the most part, relatively unscathed through a baseball season, which is pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the peaks and valleys that were still involved.
Yeah.
And still a reminder that we are not through this. I mean, the amount of times I've logged on and found out another series or game has been canceled due to COVID, even in August and September, has been maddening, considering where we were or where we thought we were in June and July.
Right. For example.
But still, like you said, like if you looked back in March and April and we were thinking, okay, maybe we're going to get in a season here, maybe it can feel like normal. And all of a sudden here we are talking about the playoffs again. And that feels somewhat normal. I will take that after 2020, any sense of normalcy I will take.
Yeah.
So hopefully 2022 is even better than this. Hopefully we don't have to deal with all of this. There's still steps that we could all take. Getting vaccinated, if you're not already, is the biggest one you can personally do at any walk of life, but also especially in baseball, whether it's you being somebody who wants to go to the ballpark, if you are a player, if you are a coach, if you are a member of an organization, getting vaccinated is a big way that hopefully by 2022, we're not even talking about any type of COVID delay or COVID cancellation or postponement or anything like that. And we can all move past this. But this was a big step, and I'm really glad we made it to this point.
Amen to all of that. And tune in this weekend to Milk TV if you can't find your way out to a ballpark. And it should be a fun one as we close out this regular season here in 2021 and head on to postseason play. He's Sam Dykstra. I'm Tyler Mond. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.